You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com. And on today's episode, for the third time this weekend, second day in a row, Tony and I are back with you. Simply because of Vitaly was injury, and we figured we don't want just one of us talking about the injury, and we feel like you guys probably want both of us on here to discuss this major impact for the Pacers. So Tony, he tore his quad tendon. You were the doctor last show. What's the prognosis long term?
Oh man, I just did a lot of research on other NBA players to get who had this. Most of the stuff I've been listening to and reading today have it as like 4 to 6 months if you or I, Adam, were to have the injury and recover, but like 6 to 12 months to get back to sports playing. If there's a surgery, and there is, still not known when. But Tony Parker is the most recent player that I found to have this. He got hurt in the playoffs in early May of 2017, and he returned basically Thanksgiving that year. And I know he was 34, 35, I think his 35th birthday crossed during his recovery time when it happened. And he came back basically like if you had around, you'd say 7 months. So even 6, 7, 8 months from now, it's in the off season. So I think there's a good likely chance given that. Vic will be back for the season opener next year, but I am not a doctor, nor do I know how Vic's body will respond to everything.
So there's a couple of things with injury. One, we have to remember Vic turns 27 in May, which makes him very young in NBA years, or still relatively young in NBA years. I mean, right, an NBA player probably peaks somewhere, I mean, they say athletes between 28 and like 32. NBA might be a little before them, but that's usually when an athlete kind of peaks. So he still hasn't even probably hit his peak athleticism in terms of where his body and the shape he could be in. So that might be delayed, the kind of trajectory he was on. But it's assuming that he comes back and he's able to play, you know, most of next year. It looks like an injury that will only probably affect what we have left, 35 games left, give or take?
Yeah, exactly 35.
Oh, wow. I know. I didn't even think. I was just guessing. So you look at it as like a 35-game injury. It's not – maybe so you had the playoffs, so it's like a 40-game injury. Unfortunately, now they lost him.
Yeah.
So it's a 40-game injury. That's like half a season. That's not the end of the world, I guess. It does hurt a playoff run, which you always want your guys there in the playoffs, but that's not the worst thing in terms of what it could have been. I mean, you know, the last time a Pacer guy left on a stretcher, he didn't play for an entire season, basically. So there's – I mean, there are bad memories there in terms of that. But the also part of it – the other part of this is that because it's probably not a full-year injury, meaning that he will be back maybe if not beginning of next – the first – day of next season towards the beginning means he'll play next year a decent amount of games, that your thought process for how you want to build the team doesn't change that much. You know, you obviously, and we were talking about this before the show, you obviously probably don't push all your chips into like you would have been maybe to make the East or the finals this season. Like you might have tried to do everything to get to the NBA finals this year, but you could still do that in the summer because you're still going to bet on him being there. So, you know, Mike Conley is the name out there. You know, if you think he's not going to be available next summer because he'll be traded already, but he's available now, you might make that move as long as you don't give up Aaron Holiday. You know, you might give up, we were talking Evans, Collison, O'Quinn, a first for Conley kind of thing.
Yeah, since the expirings are now more expendable, like we talked about yesterday, you know, that all their prices go down just ever so slightly in terms of giving them up. There's the same thing goes the other way where you're more willing to get rid of them in a deal like that if you lean that route. At the same token, though, the young guys' price just went up. Because now, you know, you really need to play them and see what you have with them. And I'm not saying to, like, pivot to playing Holiday, Alize, Sumner, all a bunch of minutes. But they do become more important to both this season now and the future. So their price has gone up while the veterans have gone down. So trade-wise, that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But if Holiday was just kind of off the table with Conley before now, he's way completely off.
Yeah, I guess what I do see happening, I honestly could see it's happening this season, this off or before the trade line, because the Pacers want to make the playoffs and be good in the playoffs. I could see a Mike Conley trade happening. I could see, you know, a Darren Collison, Evans O'Quinn, and a future first for Conley if that could get you. I don't know if that might not be enough, but if that could get Mike Conley, I could see them wanting to pull that trigger because you're getting rid of expiring guys who probably aren't going to bring back anyways, and you bring in a guy who you think can possibly win a first-round playoff series. First of all, like if they're the 3 seed with Conley, they could probably win a first-round playoff series if you can get them to that point, right?
Yeah, they could probably, win one?
So right now they're in the 3 slot. If they trade for Conley next week, is he good enough to help them carry to that 3 seed, and then that's a first-round playoff win?
That's
what I mean. You're not winning a 4-5, probably.
I don't think so, not because I don't think he's necessarily good enough for that, but just the time it would take to, integrate a player. You know, they only have a one-game lead or one-and-a-half-game lead on Philly, right? Like, just that little slippage of time where it's a new team is enough to get jumped by Boston or Philly.
If you had
a 3-game lead on them, maybe – but I don't think so.
Yeah, you're probably. I mean, I agree with you on that. I just think there's a chance if you brought him in right now, he could maybe.
There is a chance. He's good enough.
I mean, he's a really good player, and he could probably just kind of somehow fit into the system a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think about what they're going to do trade wise because I can see them being buyers and sellers, and since everyone's prices just kind of changed and it's still really raw what happened, it's hard for me to wrap my head around what might happen. And I don't know why. Like that value of what you're saying makes sense to me, but it's still harder for me to wrap my head around than it was just 2 days ago. And it's weird.
Yeah, no, I understand. So, but we both agree that you don't trade Holiday, you don't trade any assets you feel like has a future with the team.
Right.
So no Sabonis, no Turner trade.
Sabonis does not get traded unless you're getting
Bradley Beal. You trade Bradley Beal. That's
yeah.
a move.
Yeah, a long-term star.
On a decent contract. Not
same
just...
with Turner, same barometer. You have to be getting a long-term star. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. If they're a long-term star, they're on a max deal anyway, so whatever.
Yeah, that's fair. But there's Bradley Beal's max deal is actually less than Conley's.
Yeah, he got 2015 money, so it's low.
Well, and he didn't get the extra. Wasn't Conley in the league for 9 years versus Bradley Beal?
Right. Higher percentage, too. Yep, you're right.
There's all that.
You're right. Turner, Sabonis, unless you're getting 8. Guaranteed a home run trade, a bona fide star, you're out. And then the young kids, I guess just Holiday, really, because
– Yeah, Lee, if you're you trade.
You'd be willing to move Lee, Alzay, and Sumner in a deal that got you what you need. Just Holiday. Somewhere between the superstar and Conley is the value where he lands to me. And Carter Rodriguez. He does the Chase Down Pod for the Cavs and writes for Fear the Sword. He was talking about me overvaluing and Pacers people overvaluing Holiday. And I get that because his stats aren't super flashy. He doesn't play a ton. We might be doing that, but now we're at the point where easily is the most promising young player. You know, if you fail, if you trade him away and the next team fails, you're just sunk. You're screwed. So that's another reason not to, is because he guarantees the next two Pacers iterations from now doesn't suck. But if you don't have him, you have a chance to just completely suck, which they haven't done in forever. And I think that means a lot to the organization.
So it's also worth noting, I would say every 4 years the Pacers hit on a draft pick. That's what we're betting. It was Granger was 06, 07, maybe 05, somewhere in there. Then George 2010. He also Lance that year too. That was a 2 home run hits. I mean, for that team. Then you had Turner.
Second round pick.
Yeah, but I mean, that they hit on 2 guys in the draft that year. I mean, then they hit on Hibbert 1 year in between them. That was a pretty good pick at 17, or was 17 or 11 that year. I think it was 17 that year. And then you're talking about they hit on Miles Turner. I mean, whether you think Turner's fair on it, he's at getting that guy at 11 is super valuable. I mean, you'll go back to that draft and he would be, a top 5 pick right now. That draft, I mean, you got
easily.
Giannis, I think Giannis go 14 in that draft.
He did.
So Giannis is the one guy you would be they screwed up. But in terms of you would probably go
another team is fast on him. It was reasonable.
Yeah, it would be Giannis, Kristaps, and Towns, and probably him. Those are the top 4 or 5 picks. Booker in there too. Those are the top 5. Those are the top 5. So you know you're betting that you've seen flashes of him, and so you can hit on this pick because it's been about 3 or 4 since you hit on one. Second, why would you? I mean, his potential is too much to just sort of give away for a guy you're not sure changes things for you.
I agree.
So
yeah, you're absolutely right. He means a lot. It's weird how much he means to the organization now, given that I think there's validity to what Carter told me, which is we probably are overvaluing him ever so slightly. But
oh, for sure. But what if he becomes a starter? I mean,
he actually is now very, very important to the organization. So I don't think you can get rid of him unless it's a very obviously this makes sense trade.
Yeah. Let's turn to
sorry.
The more I don't want to call it conspiracy, but so
the question that everyone is asking.
Yeah. So I think everybody has noticed since Oladipo returned from his injury, he's just not been the same. I mean, it's fair to say, you know, he's been a different player and the team and says it's the defenses are guarding differently, but you feel like he didn't quite have the pop that he had last year. This, you know, like last year, I feel like he beat any guy to the rim at any moment. That's what
even people who don't really know what they're talking about were like, yeah, he has less lift on his shot.
Yeah. And
he can't get to the rim. Like you could look at his B-ball ref page and figure out the second part there.
Yeah. So the two things that would kind of made Oladipo one of the best players last season was he also had this jump shot that became super reliable, and he had this ability where he could beat anybody off the dribble with like a pick or not even a pick. You just get to the rim.
Not even a screen. That's what it was.
And if you gave him a screen, he was definitely going to beat you. Like,
yes.
You know, I mean, he went up one on. He got the switch on LeBron, and he took LeBron one on one to the rim, and he beat him to the rim in the playoffs last year. I mean, LeBron blocked him on goal, I think, but he beat. I mean, that's how good Oladipo is. I mean, the guy who, when he tries, is the best defensive player in the league, I think, and LeBron, when he's really trying at his best. So, and you can just see he definitely didn't have that speed. He still had his jump shot somewhat. Like, he still has a very clean-looking jump shot. Wasn't going down at a great rate, but that's what he still had. But as soon as he lost that speed, he lost some of his strength, and you could see he didn't have that. And so the question is, was he already hurt? And is that what led to this injury ultimately?
Yeah. I don't know about the relationship between what he had before and now enough to make that statement. But the thing is, I don't think we'll ever know. I don't think any doctor on the team or anyone in the front office will ever come out and say that, because it just makes them look bad, to be honest. But it's so hard to say, because I get why they might have wanted Vic to play. I get why Vic would want to play, obviously. And there was like a, you know, he said that when he came back right away, he was still hurt, but now he's not anymore. And then this happened, and like, you know, there are a lot of signs that just are weird, and maybe they rushed him back and then he got healthy, but because they rushed him back, it still made him more vulnerable to something like this. Like, there are a lot of things that could be the case that I don't know that we'll ever know, but I think that we can say with some certainty that the strain on his knee from coming back from injury early probably had at least something to do with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised at the end of this season if he had stayed healthy. He would have needed surgery on his knee at some point, some kind of cleanup kind of thing.
I talked about the Kyrie thing on the glass half empty pod.
Yeah, so I mean, that's sort of what I wouldn't have been surprised by that. And then, so that kind of adds to it, like, was he at a point where like he needed surgery, or he could kind of play through it and get at the end of the year? Like, that's the kind of where I thought right. He probably was at, where like he, you know, it was probably safer to take the surgery, but if he kept playing on it, he probably wouldn't do that much damage and he could fix it at the end of the season. He could get to the team in the playoffs and have a shot. And I understood why he came back, but ultimately then you realize, you know, if your knee is like 90%, you're putting a lot more strain on the other parts of your leg. And that's why, you know, you have issue with your quad essentially.
Yep. Yep. You know,
it's kind of a, it was kind of the big issue when I know both Hayward and Paul George came up injury. It was like, okay, are these guys legs going to be strong enough so they don't like just aren't like tilting to one side constantly? Like, that was why George, what did he rupture his calf or something like that? Or
yeah, he only played 15 minutes a game and he ruptured his calf.
Well, when he tore his calf in the, I believe it was the opposite leg, because he was putting too much strain on the other leg. And, you know, and that's when it's kind of the thing you have to worry about the injuries. It's not the actual, okay, his right knee, you know, he's going to tear his heel. It's like, is his foot going to be hurt worse? Is his leg gonna be hurt worse, all that stuff. And like, I mean, that was the thing with Durant a few years ago, right? It wasn't that his foot wasn't healthy. It was like, is his foot like 80, has to be 100% of what he's gonna hurt his knee, or he's gonna hurt his leg, and it's gonna just compound over and over again.
Right. And I think there is evidence to say that happened, but I don't think we'll ever find out enough to like you said, conspiracy. And I know that's not like the word you meant, but that style of thinking where like, it'll always be gnawing at us. You know, did they screw up by having him come back too soon, or should they not have been playing him at all? Always be something we have to think about as this team season and future happens, which just sucks.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to end this segment. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll do some, Pacer look around right now. All right, welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, Tony, so we're going to try to ignore the Vic injury for this segment.
I got my crystal ball here.
And just talk about the Pacers' outlook going forward this season.
This season, yeah.
Who's going to play more? We did a little bit of this yesterday, but, you know, who's going to play more? You know, the big one is Edmund Sumner is going to be called up, correct?
Yeah, that – well, the big one is Holiday's going to play, but the minor big one is Sumner's getting a call up because they need guard depth now. They don't have – like, behind Holiday on the pro roster is nobody.
But they have four guards on their
top nine. Exactly. That's just a rotation. Yeah. Someone gets hurt during a game now, you're in a lot of trouble. So McMillan said they're going to call Sumner up for the rest of the season. I don't have that language right in front of me. But he doesn't have enough days on his two-way contract to just ride that out the rest of the way. So he's almost certainly going to get it converted. My guess is what they'll do is they'll keep Stephon Hicks on the team through the rest of his 10-day. And then as soon as that's over and expires, they'll convert him because he has enough days to make it through Hicks's thing. There's no point to waive Hicks if that's the case.
Well, right. They can put Vic on some version of IR essentially and get another roster spot, correct?
No.
Okay.
They cannot. Yeah. So the way that worked, Bobby Marks had an insult to injury on Twitter right after the thing happened last night. January 15th is the last day to apply for a designated player exception. Yeah. So the Wizards applied like a day early for John Wall, and literally 10 minutes ago we found out they got approved for that. So Vic got injured too late to apply for one of those, but that is basically what IR would have been, and they would have gotten an $8.6 million roster exception, but that will no longer – they cannot get that. It's too late in the year for that to happen. I don't get why that has a deadline, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you don't want them to apply, like, in March for it, but I don't understand what the
– But why – I think the deadline should be
– Or maybe like, there's a criteria.
March 1st is the day where you have to be signed to a team to play for that team in the playoffs. Why is it not that day?
Yeah, I do you think – I guess – how strict are those deadlines? Did the Pacers try to, like, Mary. Make a stink about it? Can they get one?
They would not win that.
I know.
They would never set that precedent of letting one team do it because then every team would ask for it.
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate because they'll probably go back and change this rule this offseason, that means.
I don't know. I don't think they'll be like, oh, that's the reason. That's
– Well, let's see. I'm trying to think if it's
like – not a problem.
If there's a couple –
It's not a problem, and it's not unfair.
No, I understand it's not unfair, but let's say there's a couple of compounding injuries to major players. That will change this rule instantly. Mm-hmm. So
I don't think that'll happen, though. Anyway, that sucks. There is no replacement in that way, which would have been nice. But Sumner will probably get called up after the Hicks 10-day is over. I don't think Hicks will ever play on his 10-day, which sucks. But it's cool that he can be with the team. We never talked about him. I mean, we don't really have to.
We missed him for a second, but I figured he's a – it's like a 10-day counter. Does it really matter?
He was inactive in their last game. Like, they have no plan for him to play, I don't think. He's a 6'6 guard who is good because he's 6'6, but has like an awkward form, and he's a G League level player. But when he's gone, Sumner will get the promotion. He'll be the fifth guard, soaking up the role that Holiday has or had, I guess, for the last month, where he just plays in garbage time, basically, or if like there's a foul trouble situation or something like that.
Yeah, so then we're going to get the probably pretty decent Holiday, Joseph, McDermott's the bonus lineup with maybe.
Holiday has been fitting in with that bench real well.
The question is, too, is also, I mean, part of this whole thing is, do they end up playing Thad like 40 minutes a game?
Nope.
Why not?
That's another thing I was going to say is TJ Leaf's going to play every game now.
They were only playing.
Why would they before. Not? Why would they? No, he didn't play against the Raptors. Did you know this?
Yeah, because they were only playing 9 guys before his injury.
No, they were playing 10 every game up to the Raptors. He played like 10 games in a row.
But so, what about the in between that was when Vic got hurt last time? Leaf didn't play a ton.
No. Leaf did start playing when Turner got hurt,
and he. Oh, played that's every, right.
Remember, and yes. Then he played every game. He played in every game in a row from Turner's first game out in Toronto up through the last Toronto game. He didn't play in that game. And that was, he only played a minute 30 against Dallas at the end. But every other game, he got rotation minutes. And then he just
But he only got the first – right? It was a mix of, like, first half rotation, second half rotation minutes, right? He didn't always get second half rotation minutes.
So the Toronto game, he got garbage time. The Dallas game, he got garbage time. Every other game, he got at least first half. And then in 4 of them, he got second half as well.
Yeah, so I –
But that's still in the rotation to me. Like, they're sitting Thad during minutes where the other team is trying.
I guess you're right. No, I always view it as you're not in the second half. You're not really in the rotation.
Understood. That's just a valid point. That's a valid point. But I think you have to play him every game now. What are you losing now? You know,
I mean,
you have to try. You cannot just say, you can't say like the season's a sunk cost and also say we're not going to try TJ Leaf.
No, you're right. I just feel like Leaf is just so
I know. Bad. I understand. It's a frustrating sentiment, but I feel like he has to play every game now. And what's the point of burning out Thad too? Like, there's none.
Because you don't have next year probably, so just use him up.
No, you should re-sign Thad. He's a veteran.
I know, but saying maybe he doesn't want to come back.
And Leaf's back for sure. So you might have, like, they already picked up that option. So they might have.
It's the old Le'Veon Bell approach.
Even if Leaf's only getting the 820 he got against the Hornets, like, that's fine to me.
Yeah, no, I was thinking more you play Thad a lot the second half, I guess. So maybe you don't up to 40, but you ride him. He's playing like 30 a game this year. Maybe get into like 32 again.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, Miller Time tweeted this, and I had it in my post about what happens now. Like, if they were going all out for the forward thinking, you'd see the Turner Sabonis for 10 minutes every game. But that hurts Thad and Leaf's chances of playing. So,
but maybe they'll do that. That's a smart move.
It's certainly an option, and it's definitely not a bad one because it still allows them to fake say they're competing, and it has been a successful pairing this season. So
yeah, but I'm concerned. So who would the three guards be? Joseph Evans,
DC.
Yeah, I guess that could work.
It would. Yeah, exactly. I see where you were going with the guards thing, though. You know, like,
because that's where it's successful.
Made them click a lot because they could screen for him and make the defense scramble a lot.
Well, that successful lineup is, if you look at like the isolated five men that work in that, I mean, I know it's like not enough minutes to really make a difference, but it's the guard ones that work in that.
The three guard.
Yeah, the three guard. We need to play, you know, McDermott or Bojan. Basically, it's a garbage lineup. It's just not good.
Yeah. So I'm glad we're getting to this, though, because I think the front court rotation and why. None of you heard this. We talked about before the show, but me and Adam were deciding to do a pod before the Grizzlies game or after. I think after this has value too. Is like we can see the first instance of what they might be planning on doing. Could Thad play the three? Holy hell, absolutely not.
Right, but could they do the young Sabonis, Turner, Evans, Collison lineup? Like is that?
My God, dude, you're crazy.
But aren't those their five best players?
They're five best players that are healthy right now.
So it's Joseph, right now.
Kojo,
Joseph, Evans, or Collison, you pick. I mean,
probably.
Bojan not Bojan. Oh no, you need Bojan.
Bojan's in for sure.
So maybe you do Kojo, Bojan, Thad, Sabonis, Turner.
Oh baby. Oh man,
that could be an issue lineup. It would be weird, really weird.
Big injuries really change stuff.
I mean, I don't know. I would love to see these weird experiment lineups.
This is an aside that is kind of related. Like, my favorite thing is the garbage time lineup with McDermott at the two and Leaf at the three. It's just hilarious to me.
But, like, seriously, like, I'm trying to think. So if Thad plays a three, he can guard threes. He could.
You are a
guard
crazy
threes.
Person.
No, but
he can guard threes. That is true. And I have been on the record saying your position is what you guard. Like,
so he can guard threes. So that's like guard threes. Offensively, he cannot stretch the floor, and that's the biggest problem, right?
hey, for the last month. Come on, we got to give him some love.
Well, and Sabonis hit a three against the Raptors. He hit more than one. Sabonis
7 for 9 from three this year. That's amazing.
So maybe you, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, why not?
Why am I happy right now? This future discussion is making me smile.
I think I remember there was a point that last year I was like, maybe it was before the season, where I was like, they have nothing to lose. They should just try playing Thad, Sabonis, Turner together. Like, just see what happens.
All right, so since December 1st, Thad Young is a 43% three-point shooter.
Yeah, so why would that – tell me why that lineup really wouldn't work.
Thad of the three. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, if he's hitting 43%, you play Turner who's shooting 40%. You play Bojan who's shooting 45%.
This is so silly now. I love that we
– No, but tell me why that wouldn't work. I'm seriously thinking about it. Like, if they shoot that well over the past – why would that not – those lineups work. It would work.
I don't know. I feel like you need a wing who can like take someone off the dribble and do what Bojan does.
Well, you just put the ball to Bojan's hands. He lets Bojan be the point guard almost essentially. No, man, seriously, you spread.
Real funky.
No, but that's what, you know, you get the top screen and you spread everybody out and has Sabonis essentially as like a point center. I mean, he actually could do it. He's guarded against.
You need Sabonis as the ball handler and a Sabonis Turner pick and roll.
I mean, Sabonis is a. And I mean, I don't know where he ranks a ball handler on the team, but he's a really good ball handler in terms of just like, because you get the center matchup on him. So it's even like, it's more exploiting than like having Collins as a good ball handler against another guard.
Can you imagine Bojan guarding a quick two?
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the issue. So like the 76ers just, I mean, they just don't end up lineup, but like they just destroyed that one to death basically because you got Butler and Redick. Just, I'll actually, that might work against them with Simmons.
Who can't. No, they're tall. They're funky.
Yeah, that's a tall lineup if you go Sabonis, Turner. So you have Sabonis.
I don't know what has happened to the Pacers that we've
reached. Sabonis, hold on. You have Sabonis guarding Embiid, Turner guarding Chandler. You've got Thad on Jimmy. You've got Bojan on Redick, and you got Kojo on Simmons. Or maybe you flip Bojan and Kojo, and that works.
Yikes.
All right. Serious lineups, though. I'm trying to think about it. So Sabonis, Turner is a serious thing. They should play more.
No, and like I think you might I don't know, like this is all anecdotal, like in theory stuff, but like Holiday and the two young centers, like,
well, so the question is, does Holiday at some point, like, you just start Holiday where Evans would start and just see what happens, and instead and let the bench be the same but have a different start, kind of like when they played Joe Young as a starter one game, just because they're like, let's keep the bench unit where it is.
So I'm not in favor of like cutting veteran minutes, maybe like a tiny bit. But like,
so maybe you don't cut minutes because you end up playing at the end of games more, but you just kind of slot. You don't want your bench unit to be disturbed by the injury, I guess.
Right. Their bench is what makes them good. I always say that, and this was in my post today too. It's like these guys have earned the opportunity to compete, even if they don't have their best player. That doesn't mean they don't want to try still.
Yeah. So, no, but I'm not sure putting Holland in a certain lineup makes them not compete, does it?
No, but how does Darren Collison think about that?
That's true, and I guess. You do need a bigger. Well, you know, how is a decent defender? I mean, he has the size. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know yet. We have.
He's not a sieve.
He's better than Collison, I feel like.
I definitely don't agree with that.
What?
Darren Collison is a pretty solid pick and roll ball handler defender.
No. Yeah, but Aaron Holiday can like actually cover the court.
Oh, you're crazy if you think Holiday's better than.
No, I don't think he's like. I just
right now I will concede that both of their apexes of their defensive lines. Holiday will be better.
But yeah, okay, maybe that's what not I'm right saying. Now. Yeah, that's fine, but he's a rookie. I mean, he's still figuring it out.
Right. No, I
guess that makes sense for right now. I guess
right where he should be.
Evans probably is the ultimate guy that benefits the most because he can kind of go back to Memphis Grizzlies. Evans, but with a better team, so maybe he has a shot actually.
Well, and that's something that's interesting to me too. Man, I have so many thoughts today. You know, now Tyreek's played like almost every one of his games since Christmas has been at least good. You know, he had a lot of stinkers before. He's only had two of them since Christmas. If we can get at least decent Tyreek with the starters, like how much does that change the optics too?
Well, and also, I think Evans has proven he can carry the workload of a team for 40
yeah,
games.
Yeah, he has. I think he has the second highest usage on the roster.
I mean, if he was.
I might be wrong about that. Don't quote me on that right now. Maybe it's Sabonis. He's in the top three.
So if he had been on a. If Memphis had been in the East and not the West last year.
No, he is. Too. I was right. Okay, carry on.
He might have had his team at the end of last year might have had a shot at the playoffs for all we know. You know, we think the Grizzlies were terrible because they played in the West. But if you had put them in the East last year, which they are in East of the Mississippi, that would make sense. They might have had a – you know, they might have been the eighth seed with Tyreek as the leader.
Yeah.
In the East.
He was very good last year.
So since that Christmas day of Christmas return, he is – I think we did in the last podcast, but 12.5 points on 46, 37, 73 shooting.
That's fine.
Yeah, you'll have to up that field goal to like 15 per game, but yeah.
Like, and maybe I just have the bar too low for him because he was so bad for like a month and a half, but I mean, well, I'm taking fine from him.
I also think he probably doesn't really work playing well with Vic. He needs the ball in his hands just like Vic does. So maybe with him the ball in hand, he's also this much more efficient player because he can like take step back threes. Nobody's telling him not to because Vic took a ton of them and nobody told him not to.
Well, and Nate's talked about how he likes Evans' decision making, like maybe more than most of us observers do. But
and maybe when he's not playing with guys who I guess, but like the bench is
like good. Well, okay, but like Collison in theory helps him because he's a better shooter than Kojo.
Also playing with Thad will also because Thad always makes
that will help him a ton because Thad helps everybody.
Well, because like you know, you have some bonus, you have to kind of roll pick and rolls through to the rim where like Thad just cuts to the rim and you can just as long as you recognize it, you can get an easy bucket and an easy assist a lot,
right? Yeah, exactly. There are reasons to think good Tyreek in the starters has.
Yeah, it's the question is how much is the drop off from Tyreek's to Holiday in the bench unit, and is that significant enough? I mean, they went 7-4.
No, the drop from Vic to Tyreek is big.
No, it is.
They're both questions.
But if Tyreek is playing where he played last year, it's probably 80% each way. I mean, he's 80% of what Vic was, and then Holiday's 80% of what he was for the bench.
Yeah,
more like 60 for the start.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can we go a little lower than that, please?
I guess we gotta factor in Vic's defense hugely.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Tyreek, I'm higher on his D than everyone, but like he's 6'6".
But Vic's another level defender.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I don't want to compare them at all.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity for him, though. I'll say that. He's on an expiring deal. Maybe something happens.
So I guess we should kind of just look at the schedule real fast. So they don't have so I think they had the easiest schedule up to this point in the season. So I think they have a pretty tough schedule heading.
Their March is just insane.
So I'm just looking. So they should be able to beat the Magic, Cavs.
These long pauses are frightening.
Pistons, Magic, Bulls, Knicks.
Magic again.
Pistons twice.
Atlanta. They close with Nets. I'm imagining this not insane scenario now where they're playing the Nets on a Sunday matinee game on April 7th for like a battle for the sixth seed.
So Nets and Hawks. So I get you 11. So that's 43 wins for the team.
No, they'll surprise us with some too.
Are we sure? I mean, they played the Mavericks again. So
Philadelphia the first time.
I didn't count the Mavericks.
Okay, here's without Vic the first time. Beat the Jazz again. Beat the Suns. Beat the Bulls. Beat the Magic. Beat the Kings. Beat the Wizards.
Okay. All right. So if we go back, then I can add a win for the Pistons, for the Mavericks, add a win for the Wizards, and add a win for the Grizzlies. So that gets you to like 47 then.
Yeah, they have 35 left. If they win anywhere between 10 and 15, I think that's what I expect.
Yeah, I mean, the playoffs, what did they need to make the playoffs? I mean, if they lost every game.
To make the playoffs, they need to get to like 40, which is easy.
I say, if they lost every game here on out, what were the odds of making the playoffs still? They just do an 0-1, what do they got, 35?
For 35, they would not make it, no.
Well, let's see.
The 8 seed right now is the Heat, and they're barely under 500. So
oh, okay, you're right. I'm looking more at the Wizards for 2020.
The 9 seed, yeah, the 9 seed is under 45 win percentage. Like it's the Pistons Wizards slap fight right there.
So if they won 8 more games, they're probably in the playoffs, right? You said 40.
I bet the Pistons are going to close the 9 seed at about 34, 35. So you really have to be ahead of that number.
I mean, would it be terrible if they went 5-30 and got a lottery pick?
Yes, that would be awful. Are you kidding me how disengaged everyone would be at that?
Oh, well, you were meant to. I'm just talking about for the team in the long run. You trade away all your expirings. You just.
I hate that idea. I hate it.
I know. I hate that idea too. I just. Just a thought.
People, I love that KB clapped back at that dude who told him to tank on Twitter. That was fantastic.
You're too far along. You don't tank right now. You just.
Oh, you can't.
You just give your young guys a chance and you look at if there's a really good offer for one of your guys that you don't need in the long run.
I had a guy, Adam, tell me on Twitter today that to replace Vic, they should go with Carmelo Anthony.
No, I would rather gouge my eyeballs out to never watch basketball again.
There's slightly crazier ideas, I guess. But yeah,
I think is Young's Sabonis turn lineup crazier than that?
No, I don't think so.
I really want
to counting on Melo to be here, like, hi, you such a guy.
Oh, five, just like 5 minutes. Bring me Kojo. Bojan.
Here's a fun hypothetical. Carmelo signs with the Pacers. What rank does he end the season at in terms of jersey sales for the team?
No, nobody buys jersey.
You don't think so? If Carmelo Anthony signed here for the rest of the year?
I feel like Indiana fans don't like Carmelo. I don't know why.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe you're right about that.
It's not that well liked anyone in the NBA. It's really his fall from grace has been just hilarious.
So bad. But he wasn't even like horrible with Houston. He just didn't fit what they were doing.
No, but like, you know, there was a point where like probably in like the 08, 2010 range, you thought Carmelo's like, he's as good as LeBron or the close
to scoring title.
Yeah. I mean, he was awesome. When that Nuggets team lost in the West Finals, you're like, this guy's going to win a championship someday. Like he has a shot. He's going to be in an NBA final. He's going to be competing with LeBron, someday for a championship, and then it just never happened.
With Vic out for the year, expect a lot of Locked On Pacers helter-skelter conversations, such as the one you were currently listening to.
Yeah, well, this is just 2 days post-injury.
I know. And then, like, everyone's exhausted their entire thought train of this now.
Yeah, I think we'll move on to actually just real Pacer talk. The question is are we going to bring up, Vic is hurt thing?
Once they play a game, we'll have such a better idea.
Yeah, I just feel like half the pie is going to be, well, Vic is hurt, so I guess this is not as bad. But, like, if guys play, we have to be critical. We have to just talk about it.
I honestly think with no expectations, it could become more fun.
Yeah, well, right now, I said I have a 5-30 expectation for this team to end.
Yikes.
Not really. I'm thinking I probably 10-25 is probably where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, they were so good this year. This is so disappointing.
I know. 68% wins is insanely,
like,
good.
They were going to win like maybe 55 games.
They were on pace for 56. Just on win percentage, though, so probably not actually.
Yeah, they're probably 55 is where I think I had them when I did my last little run through the schedule.
Yeah, It's crazy that this Grizzlies game means so much. And then they have Cords next week. Their second and third games without Vic. NBA TV at home against Golden State, at Wizards on ESPN. Like, damn it.
Yeah.
You think ESPN's happy to have the no John Wall, no Victor Oladipo Wizards Pacers game?
I'm sure they're pumped to watch. I was going to say Jan Mahimi take on like Kyle O'Quinn. Have the two worst guys up in TJ. They could actually play minutes, or maybe TJ Leaf.
Their week is insane. Their first week without Vic is insane. Warriors, and then at Washington, at Orlando, back to back, and then a day off, and then at Miami. That's
frankly great. Beating the Raptors is might be like the difference between the 6 and 7 seed right now.
Yeah, the Raptors fans are like, hey, whatever, Kawhi didn't play, we lost to the 3rd seed on the road. I'm like, dude, the Pacers beat him without Vic. Like, that's a good win.
Pacers, man. I mean, think about it, if Vic had been healthy, they might be a team that actually,
they beat the Raptors. I mean, I know Kawhi didn't play, but no Vic either.
It's just sad. Only one Vic playoff in 2 years. It's just sad.
I know. It's a shame.
Hopefully we'll get more in the future of him.
We have yet to see Vic versus not LeBron in the playoffs.
Oh yeah.
Sucks.
Man. Straight for Mike Conley. Straight for Mike Conley. That's the move right now.
I made Adam sad.
I've already been sad. You didn't make me sad. all right. You got anything else you want to talk about?
Not really. I don't think it's reasonable to expect them to trade for anyone super good or to bottom out. So, reasonable expectations of little, of appreciably small moves at the trade deadline.
Yeah, maybe they'll make some kind of move with a future, very future, but to get a player to add to their depth, but that'd be it.
Our next weekly show trades will be much different than this one's.
Yeah, the problem, I guess, I'm trying to think how they can use a second round pick without trading a guy they have. I guess they could, Kyle Quinn a second for somebody could get you a rotation player possibly.
That is true.
On a 1 year deal. So that's what I would look for. I had trouble finding a deal like that. I was looking around for any guy who makes $5 million.
Figure stuff out by next week.
Well, the guy is Lance, but we can move on that later. That's Kylo Quinn in a second for Lance probably gets you him.
Maybe. I don't even think you have to throw in the pick there.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, we will end this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TEASTNBA and me at FreedomAdam5. We'll be back with probably a show on Sunday. And then obviously Tony will be back for our weekly show on Monday. That is all for his podcast. Have a great rest of your day.